Steve, we still have not gotten the work papers. That's part of the transparency issue. You've asked for recommendations. Actually, you received a recommendation from McCullough Research. Why from McCullough Research? Who the hell are they? The answer is there's not been the time to bring it through the process. We have not had a board meeting. We have not had a board meeting of the individual groups either. So we have a serious public involvement problem. We do have some people who live in Southeast that were on the committees. They're fine people. One of them is a good friend of mine. But that's different than representation. One of the next speakers is Don Gardner. If we had been asked, retired Peabot, very smart, much smarter than I am. And he would have been our representative on the business side. But we weren't asked. And you lost that expertise. You didn't have anyone from OTREC. You didn't have anyone from the universities. You didn't have the utilities. The people who had the data and the expertise were not in that room. On the allocation of the benefits, that's hard. Southeast Uplift is uncomfortable with the current allocation. There are 100 different arguments they want to make. I will only make one very, very quickly. We have LEDs in there. As any energy expert will tell you, the LEDs are generally regarded as cost-effective. You don't have to fund them net. Their savings pay for the equipment. My clients do this all the time. In fact, I looked at the ceiling, and we need to change these out, by the way. So,
been up there since 1996, so it's
due. I'll bring a ladder next time. Yeah. Finally, there's the problem about homework. When I was a child on the wrong side of the tracks in Chicago, Reverend Templeton said, "Can God create a stone too heavy for him to lift?" The answer I remember to this day is no, because it goes against his plan. Can legislators do it? Yes, they do it all the time. You've done it here. There are problems with this proceeding, even down to the arithmetic. We've left off the major road users. We have included, by the way, lost, TriMet, Union Pacific Railroad, and a number of the others. Your own records show no major transportation users in the transportation category. This, unfortunately, means the entire set of numbers in that table have to be corrected. Now, I've offered to work with the staff. I've asked them if I'm wrong. They've not told me I'm wrong. But this is a major problem, and it's a problem of not getting it through. So what do we have to do? Well, I'm going to take one more second. McCullough Research, we went through this. We can bring you the same amount of money for a 9-cent gas tax across both gasoline and diesel. Part of it is because we have a lot of implementation costs, and of course we have a 70% problem that we're not going to get everyone to pay. You've got that in front of you. It was sent in to you several days ago. It is a real proposal. It's backed by real numbers. It's not perfect. We're happy to learn more. But we are bringing real numbers and real research to the table. Thank you for the extra time.
Thank you. And can you give us your ideas? You might, while you're here, talk to Mr. Romaine, who's here representing the gasoline dealers, and see what he thinks of that 9-cent gas tax proposal.
We do not always get along, given my testimony at the U.S. Energy Commission, but I'm sure he will forgive me for that.
I hope so. Thank you very much. Okay, I see Mr. Chamberlain has arrived, and as I mentioned earlier, we're going to call on him next to come up and speak on behalf of labor. Mr. Chamberlain, are you still in the room? Okay, he's coming downstairs, and there was someone else we were waiting for, I think Cameron, but he's not back yet. So take a moment and give Mr. Chamberlain his time, and then we'll move on to the rest of the sign-up sheet then, please. He's going to make a dramatic entrance here for us. There he is.
Very dramatic.
Thank you.
Very dramatic.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and members of the Portland City Council. My name is Tom Chamberlain, and I'm a little breathless because I ran from the gallery down here. But I'm president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing over 225,000 working men and women across the state of Oregon. And while organized labor has not taken a position as of yet on the street fee, call it election hangover. We're sort of focused on that election and do not take us not taking a position as being opposed to the street fee. We just haven't had time to evaluate it. Lord knows we need to get our roads fixed. We depend on them to get into work, move commerce. but I'm here today to testify that we are united in supporting a progressive tax for funding. And for good reason. Working Oregonians are doing everything they can to feed their kids, pay their rent, and find transportation to work. Over the last 20 years, Oregon's median income has actually dropped by $5,000 per year. To put this another way, according to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David Clay Johnson, real wages for the bottom 90% of Oregon's wage earners between 1966 and 2011 grew by $59 per year when adjusted for inflation. The top 10% grew by $116,000 per year. Think of it this way. If that $59 in gained income for 90% of Americans equal an inch, the top 10% wages rose by 168 feet. And since the recession, the 2008 recession, 95% of all wage growth has gone to the top 1%. And yes, Oregon has added new jobs, but over 45% of those jobs earn less than $15 per hour. We live in a state where almost one in four kids live below the poverty line. Oregon workers understand we must fund road maintenance. We must have sidewalks to keep our kids safe going to and from school. And they're willing to pay their fair share, as long as wealthy Oregonians pay their fair share. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Tom. Okay. Thank you. Let's take the next three, please.
The next three are Don Gardner, Jeff Cole, and Andrew Nisbet. And they'll be followed by Richard Donan, Yu Tay, and Terry Parker.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Don Gardner. I'm the vice president of the Southeast Uplift Board. And yes, I was a 30-year PDOT employee. And so I'm going to begin by expressing my belief that the city transportation services are and have been underfunded for a number of years. Meeting the city's transportation maintenance needs and providing the capital improvements requested by our residents will require additional revenue. Unfortunately, in my view, this proposal today has some fundamental flaws. There's an inequitable allocation between different business classes, failure to develop a fee structure that adequately charges the highest impact road users, and the unwarranted nonprofit discounts to the largest medical institutions in the city. The residential tax is also flawed in that state and federal court rulings don't allow us to tax them. I understand that there's the whole issue of try to go to the legislature and change it, but it does create a very inequitable solution. I think the reason we have this controversy today is the lack of an adequate and meaningful public process. There are 7 neighborhood coalitions, 95 individual neighborhood associations, and to my knowledge, none of these organizations were asked to participate in the process. When the first proposals came out, both business and the low-income and advocacy groups expressed their pushback and wanted to discuss this. Their special committees were set up, but those of us who were being asked to pay 50% of the fee weren't even involved in the process. The other thing is that the mayor has repeatedly stated that if anyone has a better idea to bring it forward, I would respectfully ask both you and Commissioner Novick, when exactly were we supposed to do that?
Well, one of the times would have been the community forum that we held at Sunnyside School in Southeast Portland 6 months ago, but now would be fine, too.
The problem is that we don't sit in a council hearing with a proposal on the table and go over a whole negotiation and what's the best way to do this and not. You need to be in the process. Our experience is we invited both PDOT staff to my neighborhood and neighbor station, and we invited in the Southeast Uplift. What we got was, here is our proposal as we see it today. Of course, it's changed 3 times since then, but it continues to change. So we need this better process. The other question we have is that my neighborhood association has voted to request a public vote. This really went against most of their grain because they really believe that council is elected to make decisions. But the lack of process, or what they perceive as a lack of a public process, is what led to that vote. And we're now also hearing that from other public our neighborhood associations and coalition groups. So I've known the mayor for a number of years, and I have no reason to believe that he does not have the best interests of the city at heart. I have no reason to believe, even though I don't know you, Commissioner, that you aren't exactly in the same position. Best interests forward. But this proposal needs to slow down. You need to have a better process. You need to involve some other people in it, and then we can move forward. We, as a neighborhood association, have taken no position on the fee. The position was really based on the lack of a public process that they were able to be involved in.
Sir, just to reiterate the mayor's point, we had town hall specifically on the question of how best to raise the funds back in April, which anybody could have attended.
Which was a few blocks from Southeast Uplift's headquarters. So I guess I'm a little floored that
you know, and I know, that town hall meetings draw a very limited, the public notice of those to draw people to them, and coming prepared to those to, oh, let's sit down and discuss how we're going to develop something is significantly different than setting in a committee group to try to sit down and work out how it's going to be. Am I saying that your proposal is wrong? No. I have nobody who's telling me one way or the other. What I'm hearing is they weren't allowed to participate, or they don't feel that they were able to participate in a meaningful way, and they want to slow it down.
Sir, yes, sir? Mr. McCullough said earlier that he and I have changed about 30 emails in the past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. He could have sent those emails in April. And that's something that he and I have discussed. There was nothing preventing anybody from contacting us throughout this whole process.
Well, that's fine, but I've been in a lot of public processes, and this is not a good one.
All right, Don, thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council.
Hey, folks, again, I know there's a lot of enthusiasm and all that, but folks, let's not either applaud or boo our fellow citizens. Thanks. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Cole. I'm on the Sunnyside Neighborhood Board. I'm also on the Executive Committee of Southeast Uplift, but today I'm speaking for myself. Equity, safety, and a parable. Sam is a maid who drives to clients' homes in a 2002 Corolla sedan. Portland roads are rough, so Sam's gas mileage is reduced, and every year Sam's car needs an extra $400 in repairs. A brake job is overdue. The shocks are shot, the tires well-worn. Sam must choose. Sam's clients rarely must. Equity and safety become casualties. We all know this is bad news. For every dollar we fail to invest today in fixing our crumbly streets, we'll spend $3, $5, or $10 in the future. That's a real future shock, a real emergency. And that's less money, far less money in the future for important projects like safety. As for safety, much progress has fortunately been made. From 1996 to 2010, Portland traffic-related fatalities have trended down sharply. Statewide on Oregon roads, traffic fatalities per mile are one-tenth what they were seven decades ago. Although I believe every street fee dime should pay for sealing, grinding, and paving between the curbs, consider this based on projected street fee revenues. We could focus on and fund three specific areas: sidewalks, safe routes to school, and high crash corridors, and we would still have 71% left over for street preservation. Even if Portland streets were all in A1 condition today, we'd still need to spend $30 million per year to keep them that way, or so the city engineer tells me. Now I'm going to go off text a bit to meet your challenge. What should we do? I do support an increase in the gas tax, the city gas tax. Mr. McAuliffe said 9 cents. I'd go higher, 10 cents. For the following reasons, I would argue to my fellow citizens. One, the collection can be handled through the state, very little administrative fees. Two, there are already restrictions on how gas tax money can be spent. There are state restrictions. That's an assurance to my fellow citizens that it will be spent on the roads. Three, it's equitable. The users of gas and diesel pay for it. And we should mention, in terms of diesel, that one tractor-trailer truck causes as much road wear as 9,000 cars per mile. And we have no component for a diesel tax in this. So that's why I would support a gas tax, and I'd walk door to door with you on that. Now, if you can give me another 20 seconds.
Okay.
The other component would be redistributing some of those franchise utility fees back to PBOT. This would also account for electric vehicles, which use electricity. And also, on behalf of my neighborhood association, we did write you a letter that we would like the council to look at parking as a revenue generator. If you look at our streets, any average street is either 20 to 50% used for parking, and we don't have any component to raise revenues for parking. So thank you very much
for your time. Thanks for the suggestions. Thank you. Welcome.
Andrew Nesbitt. I'm not part of anything, so I guess I'm just speaking for
part of Portland. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, thank you for this opportunity to testify. I think there are only two things that are of major concern to me. One, there is a clear disconnect between the arguments for the need for funds and the arguments for the need for the way the funds are spent. These are two different issues, and they don't seem to be being addressed as two different issues. And that bothers me intellectually, if nothing else. To say that we need to repave the streets is not the same thing as saying we need a specific new fund to be able to repave the streets. And the disconnect in the argument is bothersome to me. The other thing is as the legislation appears to stand right now, Archimedes demonstrated that if you put something into a body of water, the body of water goes up by the same amount. The current mechanism for ensuring that the street fee would be expended on safety and road maintenance may work. I suspect there are a number of people in this room who believe it should be stronger, and I suspect that I would be one of them. But unless that same mechanism is applied to the budget that it currently, as it currently stands, what you are asking the taxpayers to do is to hand you $30 million to do something that you are already spending $30 million to do. Because if the current maintenance budget can be spent in other ways, I suspect that eventually it will.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
That's a valid point. Commissioner Novick, what is the current maintenance budget within PBOT?
I think for pavement maintenance, it's in the neighborhood of $14 million. And then we spend actually more than that maintaining the signals, bridges, streetlights, et cetera. And one reason for that is that if signals go out, that's an immediate safety problem. Whereas as the payment deteriorates, it's a huge problem, but it's not the same sort of immediate, this light has gone out, it's a dangerous intersection kind of issue.
But we have that number, and we could publicize how much we currently spend on street maintenance.
It's in the materials, but that's a good idea. Now, we had a Bureau Advisory Committee member here, Cameron Witten, but I think he left. Is that correct? He had to leave? Okay. Cameron, are you here? All right. Apparently not. Let's go to the next three, please.
Our Richard Donan, Yu Tay, and Terry Parker, and they will be followed by Harry Samper, I believe his last name, Don Kaufman, and if Claudia Martin is here, she'll be next.
Welcome. She'll get those to us if you've got copies for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Richard Donan. I'm a concerned citizen. I'm not representing anybody, but the city of Portland in terms of making it a wonderful, livable place. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. I really appreciate that. And the reason I'm here is because I have a different it. Instead of what I consider to be a somewhat complicated system where you've got two levels of taxation, one for residents, one for business. My proposal is to enable a City of Portland parking permit sticker fee, similar to the one they have in Chicago, which has been working for a long time. And I believe I emailed all these to the council earlier. The proposal establishes a yearly fee and a sticker, which would be somewhat like, this is an OPB sticker, but it's a cling. It's easy to get on and off. It would also mandate that the funds be used extremely for street maintenance. This would apply to all motorized vehicles, and that's the issue. It's the things that are on the street that damage the streets. People who don't drive, obviously, aren't applying any damage to the streets. And the other thing it does is it allows us to capture funds from everybody that doesn't live in Portland. For example, if you live in Gresham or Vancouver or Salem or Beaverton and you drive into Portland for work, this would capture dollars from the people who are actually using the streets beyond just the residents of Portland. And it's a fairly simple program. You already have a permit fee system in place for several neighborhoods in Portland. People are used to paying it. There's a bureaucracy set up to sell those permits for people. And you could basically work through the normal Multnomah County compliance system for parking tickets. If somebody doesn't have one, they get a warning, and next time they get a ticket, which obviously would be high enough that they would decide that compliance is far less expensive. And using the fact, I did ran some numbers, if you had a 50% adoption rate in the Tri-County area and a 20% adoption rate in Clark County to buy these stickers, at $35 a sticker, you'd make $25 million. At $55 a sticker, you'd make about $40 million. Again, getting only the people that use motorized vehicles on Portland streets, which really caused the problem. The stickers themselves are very inexpensive. Chicago puts them out all the time. I, by the way, am a Portland native. I just happened to live in Chicago for a little while. And boy, I didn't like the way they ran that city, that's for sure.
Other than this.
Oh, well, no, actually, no. I'm here because I think other ideas are workable, and they've been proven that they work in other municipalities and big cities. It ends up being that it could be a short-term fix in terms of if the money that comes in meets the need and as it grows to a greater compliance in people around the Tri-County area, you could actually lower the sticker fee. I know that sounds incredible, but I've seen jurisdictions that actually have done that. So all of these points that I brought up, I think, are a very much more simple and equitable way to get the streets fixed. It approaches and deals with the real issue, motorized vehicles on the street, not residents just of the city of Portland.
Thank you.
So I just want to expand on one point. It's not just vehicles, but the weather that does a lot of damage to streets. So even if all of us did nothing but walk and ride bicycles, the streets would still deteriorate, and we'd still need to fix them periodically.
Of course, yes. Acts of God, or I live in Portland because it rains.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you putting so much thought into this. Thank you. Who's next?
Greetings, Mayor and Commissioners. I want to thank you for the opportunity for me to speak. My name is Yu. I'm owner of MacBCX in Hollywood and vice president of the Hollywood Boosters Business Association. And I came with two other board members who are in the audience in support. So I've actually come to like you, Mr. Mayor, from the few personal interactions that I've had, not much, but you're very earnest and also in asking for an alternative, which I'll get to later. The Hollywood Boosters, to provide context, we're a neighborhood business association that has been organized since 1934, and we currently count 96 neighborhood businesses, and our primary mission is to promote the economic and social well-being of the district, which also encompasses the neighborhoods of Grant Park, Hollywood, Laurelhurst, and Rose City. So this issue is important to us for not just as a business association, but also for our customers and our residents. And We took a vote. We discussed based on the information that we've had as a board and as an organization, we officially oppose the street fee. And we'd like to see it referred to a vote or to a public vote, actually, if you were to continue. But I think that adding the sunset option and some other options, they're nice additions, but I think that they're not taking into account this. The way it's still structured is better than back in May, but the way it's structured is still it's not there yet. And I think I've heard you say that if this was taken to a public vote, that it might be opposed. And so what could be done? I'm not sure. But I think that whatever that needs to be done needs to take into account the unique usage and demands on our roads from different users and also the environment. So I would help campaign for you personally, not on behalf of the boosters, but I would help campaign for you if we come up with an alternative. And maybe it doesn't. We have to face reality and see this as requiring a need for a gas tax increase and bicycle registration. I'm a bicyclist, and I think that that might be okay. But before that happens, I would like to see, and I think many citizens would like to see more transparency and more reduction in waste in city spending and more prioritizing of the spending that reflects the different neighborhoods. And we're not really seeing that. So I would go to bat for you, but I think that those other things many of us would like to see happen. So I want to thank you for letting me talk.
Thanks very much, and congratulations on a great great Veterans Day parade again, 40th year. Nice job.
What specifically in the current proposal do you and the boosters disagree with?
So we haven't had a chance to discuss on this current iteration of the fee and the income tax. And I think one of the points that we're against is implementing a tax without having voter participation. I think we fought a war over that for a reason. but also there's the fee affects businesses in a disproportionate way. The small neighborhood businesses that are for the business side, it would implement a fee schedule, and so there is some increase on the size and revenue of the businesses, but it doesn't reflect the actual usage or demand.
I'm getting a lot of email from citizens who, in fact, one put it pretty succinctly, that said, sending this to the voters is outsourcing your job to the people that pay you to do it. That's what one of your fellow citizens said. How would you suggest that I reply to that?
Well, sir, I think that you are doing a really good job. And I really see the earnestness of you in trying to solve the problem. And I don't see you avoiding your responsibility. And I think that by referring this to the voter, it's not deflecting responsibility. This is a tough choice, but it's actually not one for you to make for us, though, for all the citizens in the city.
Right. Okay. But what's on the ballot? Each of us would vote yes or no. So should something get referred either by the council or by the voters by signature gatherers, we want to figure out what's the best thing that has the most likely of getting something. And so I appreciate your comments, particularly about the particular businesses in your area. And thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Keep it coming. Thank you. Mr. Parker.
Terry Parker, fourth generation Portlander. Sharing the road must require sharing the financial responsibility. PBOT has put forward the premise that on-street parking is a commodity. If on-street parking is a commodity, then every square inch of the city street network is also part of that commodity. Before a street fee is implemented and double-dipping occurs whereby motorists whom already pay gas tax user fees and license and registration fees are charged yet another tax, the playing field must be leveled. In advance to carrying out any citywide street fee. Equity requires that bicyclists must start paying their share, inclusive of bike lanes that often take away on-street parking, the excessive amount of specialized bicycle infrastructure that bicyclists continually want more of, and the proliferation of other bicycle-specific reserve commodity space, including buffering, that is consuming more and more of the limited space on public right-of-ways. Sure, the BTA and other bicycle advocates support the current proposal because there is an alternative agenda within the street fee, and bicyclists continue to freeload off funding subsidies that other people pay. Bicyclists are not royalty. TriMet buses do the heaviest damage to cities.
Hey, come on, please.
TriMet buses do the heaviest damage to city streets. Therefore, a portion of transit fares should also be used for street maintenance. Funding the maintenance of existing sidewalks must also be synonymous with constructing new or wider sidewalks. Equity, both pre-street fee and post-street fee, must be top priority, including plugging the public pension loophole. Any presence of dictatorial social engineering and or discriminatory transport mode hierarchies as proposed in the comp plan must be totally tossed out if a street fee is to be legitimately equitable. Attached to my written testimony is a bicycle safety and infrastructure funding plan that's been sent to the Oregon House Legislature. I hope you'll support it. That said, until such time that a bicycle fee is on the books, I cannot support a local street fee. There must be a transparent prerequisite of motorist equity. Otherwise, motorists will be paid twice for what they utilize while continuing to subsidize bicycle infrastructure and other alternatives for freeloaders. Should the council autocratically dictate a street fee without a vote of the people, I will be one of the first people in line to sign any petition that will place it on the ballot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Terry. Okay, let's take the next three.
All right, Harry Semper, I got the last name's wrong. And then Dan Kaufman. And is Claudia Martin back in the room? Then we'll go with Rob Sandowski. And they'll be followed by Don Bach, Ruth Atkins, and Jill Smith.
Go ahead, you're next.
Hey, Novak brought up...
Name for the record, please.
Harry Sampson, S-A-M-P-S-O-N. Novak brought up the town meetings. And the town meetings is different. It was one. The street tax and the business was one. You changed it without the view of the public, which is wrong. We had a right to say. He went to the town hall meeting saying, is one. How did it get changed to two without us talking about it? Two, he let people down at the meeting when they said, everyone had to pay. How did they know it would have meant charities? He failed to bring that up at the meeting. Three, Multnomah County has to function together. You take all the extra property tax. How many people in here have noticed all these new houses, all these new condos going up? That is bringing more money to the county. Now we have to work as a team and use that to fix the streets. When you're talking about we should pay, why don't you get into your pet projects? Like, you have the homeless shelter for the women. For 10 days, that's focusing on 70 women for 10 days extra. $279 for 10 days. No showers for them. Cup of soup. That way, the buildings are owned by nonprofit. You could give them money. We have empty schools that have showers and buildings that we could be using for them, and they could have something to eat and save money. Before you put the tax on us, you need to cut corners, like the sweaters for downtown, $107 million. You say, well, bring business downtown. What about the other areas that need business? Like the Selwood, where they're suffering from the bridge closure. They're not getting anything. You're worried about downtown when the sweater's $107,000. You need to tighten your belt before you ask us to tighten our belt.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hello, Council. Thank you for taking my testimony today and providing this forum for us. My name is Dan Kaufman, and I am I'm representing myself as a citizen, although I am a member of the Freeloaders, otherwise known as the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I'm also a big supporter of the Coalition for the Livable Future, and I'm sure you'll be here, they'll be weighing in. But I speak for myself today. First of all, Commissioner Fritz, you asked what it should be. And Mayor Hales, you've asked, you know, what will it take for you to put on the, you know, the raincoat, if you will, and get out there. I'm not a weatherman, but the political winds are telling me that we're going to need to perhaps get some raincoats. So if you want me to join in on this, this is what I would like to see as it. First of all, Vision Zero. I would like this to be tied to Vision Zero. I would like there to be some real metrics about how we get safety, and that all of these things that we do are going towards creating safer streets for all of us. Second of all, to get me out there and to campaign for this, because again, I think there will be a vote. That's what I'm feeling here. But to get me out there, I would like us to see this work towards our 25% mode share goals for bicycles by 2025. And third, I'd like to see it go towards the climate action plan. Now, these are all things that either the council or agencies have put forth together that Portlanders have gotten behind, the things that we've wanted to see happen. So these aren't new things, but when we spend transportation dollars, they can go towards these things and push towards us. So I would like to see those included. I know that that's going to be, you know, there'll be opposition from the petroleum lobby, but they're going to oppose anything, apparently. So that's what it's going to take to get me to get on board with this.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Mr. Coffin, you mentioned Vision Zero, and I'm not sure that everybody is aware of what that is.
Well, Vision Zero is the concept that the first and foremost transportation should be designed. This is out of Sweden, but transportation systems should be designed that there are no fatalities for any kind of users. And I do not feel that when you've got 35-mile-an-hour roads going in front of houses that have children living in front of them, you might as well have an alligator pit in front of that house. It's no different. We know that when you're hit by a car doing 35, you're going to probably die or be severely injured. How this happens in residential areas where children live and elders need to cross the street, that we can have zones that are that fast, is beyond me. Those are the kind of things that Vision Zero moves us away from and towards safer streets that children as young as 8 and elders all the way to 80, 108, whatever, can use. And that's what we need here in Portland, and that's what I'm hearing a lot of people, my friends and family, are wanting to see happen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Appreciate your advocacy. Okay, let's take the next three, please.
Our Rob Sadowski, Don Bach, and Ruth Atkins. Okay. And they'll be followed by Jill Smith, Jonathan Ostar, and David Williams.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and members of City Council. I represent the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, and I'd like you to tell a quick story about a little girl that we know named Lanesha. Rob Sadowski. Lanesha is an 11-year-old girl who lives in St. John's, who took our bicycle safety class a few weeks ago, really excited, big smile on her face, but still can't safely bike to her school because she yet doesn't have a neighborhood greenway to get her to those schools. This investment that we're talking about here can make a big difference for Portland. We represent more than 10,000 Portlanders who bicycle on Portland streets every day, as well as hundreds of businesses and their employees who rely on an intermodal network that is safe, well-maintained, and fully connected. We are citizens who know firsthand how important maintenance and safety is when we get around each day. You might say we're closer than most when it comes to being on the roads. We're business leaders who build great bikes, great parts, and make great clothing that keep us dry. We include businesses that employ as few as one to businesses that employ thousands. Together, we stand in support of safety and maintenance of our roads. This current proposal, as it stands, to bring new revenue, half from businesses and residents, with protections for our lowest income residents, and a dedicated 56% to maintenance and 44% to safety, with no sunset clause, is good public policy. The BTA recommends an increase of the cap on the residential fee to make higher monthly rate for the richest Portlanders who can clearly afford to pay. We are concerned about placing too high of a burden on middle-income earners. We remain convinced, though, that safe streets should be our number one priority, and would welcome an increase in the amount of money dedicated to make them safer, especially where conditions are the worst. Every penny spent now on safety improvements has the potential to save lives and ease an enormous financial burden on the city and the county. We deserve to live in a city where we will not tolerate a single road fatality, but we will also be unable to move the needle on fatal crash reduction without significant investments in safety. More money for safety now will address years of inequitable investment, and polling shows that is what Portlanders want. Please pass this and do it for Lanesha.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bach, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mayor Hales and Council. I'm Don Bach. I live in Hillsdale. I'm president of Southwest Trails, and I'm a volunteer for AARP. And in the spring, we expressed qualified support for the street fee. Over the summer and fall, with a lot of work on a lot of parts, and quite frankly, I don't know how the staff's kept up with this, but I've been exhausted trying to keep up with all the changes that come down, trying to figure out projects and the way the funding and go and so on. You know, we've got a lot of people out there that are very confused about what's happened because it's been a moving target. And so, I think most of the concerns we addressed have been resolved and or partially, major way, not totally, but in a major way resolved. As an owner of two cars, I think a street fee is really important just to keep paving the streets because it'll cost me far more than the tax, and I'll pay a significant amount to keep those going. That's really important. We're very enthused to see the list of safety projects and accomplished with this, and we're particularly supportive of Vision Zero as a component and moving towards that. Now, I'm going to go off script. You can read the rest of my comments. They're talking about projects. But as I was coming down here today, I met a gentleman that was coming to this meeting, lives near me in Hillsdale, and he was totally confused about what was coming down and what was. And I didn't know that all the answers, a lot of the stuff he was asking, but I didn't know some. So here's my thought. We could put it out to the voters. I think that'd be just total chaos because you're going to have all the few signs of do this, do that, and so on. I'd say put it out to the voters, but do it 2 years from now. Implement it now, get it started, and show people what you can do, and have very careful follow-up in all these pieces that we're doing. And then put it to the vote saying, okay, now we're going to have a vote, but now we can talk about stuff with knowledge about what was going on. Because if we don't, you got all the people's opinions coming out. It's going to be just really difficult. And so that's my approach to that. And then if it has, that would be a sort of a 2 year sunset if it didn't pass. But on the other hand, it would be in place. People would understand how we're collecting the taxes, what the ratios of the things you're doing are, and where we're going from here. So, you know, I just think that's a way of approaching it that might make a lot more sense than trying to move forward otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just have a quick question. When you say 2 years, are you intentionally pegging it to a high turnout presidential election? But is that in your thinking, or is it just 2 years?
No, it was not. My thinking was it's going to take 2 years to get this organized to where people are going to start understanding what's happening. And I would put this together with a very intentional, the review committee, some tough guys on it that are related to the communities, and if Don Gardner wants to be there, great. But the people that are working in the communities, so they can testify to what's going on. And the problem we've got is credibility in the city. I mean, this whole water sewer thing has caused a whole lot of chaos, along with the streetcar and, you know, all other things that are happening. So we got to calm that down a bit. And one way to do it is create confidence that we're really making steps in the right direction. And I think you could basically say, give us 2 years, we'll work it out, we'll have it going, and you'll have some very clear steps of implementation here that you can point to and say, this is what we've done. We goofed up here. We've changed it. This is what we should do. We shouldn't have done that. But you can admit the mistakes and then move forward in a positive way. And we're modifying it this way for this proposal, you know, because this makes more sense to everybody. You can involve a lot of communities in that. And then the other part is intentionally get people. I'm willing to go out in the rain, in the sunshine too, and work on this, but I need stuff that I can get my arms around saying, this is performance. This isn't pie in the sky. Promises to come out in the future. I think that's the way to sell something like this. This is a big change for Portland, and we're going to have a huge amount of effort to make it happen. If it fails without this kind of effort, then we're 2 or 4 or 5 years more before we're going to get anything done, and my car is going to be really broken down.
Thanks, Don. Thank you very much. Welcome, Ruth.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. My name is Ruth Adkins. I'm Policy Director at Oregon Opportunity Network. So as you know, I served as chair of the Nonprofit Low-Income Advisory Committee, and I'm here today on behalf of the committee to express our strong support for the proposal before you. This proposal, in our view, is vastly improved from the initial one in May. It reflects significant community and stakeholder input, as well as a significant degree of compromise. We urge you to support and move forward immediately to enact proposals so that the city can begin work as soon as possible to start investing in our streets. We would support a sunset, but not one that includes an automatic referral to the voters, but more the review and the oversight as has been discussed. In particular, we appreciate the progressivity of the proposed residential fee with an exemption for our lowest income neighbors. A progressive approach with exemptions for vulnerable Portlanders was the single most important value for our committee, given the affordable housing crisis and the growing income inequality in our community. We also appreciate the use of a racial equity lens in helping determine the project list and urge that racial equity be included in the charge for the ongoing oversight committee. Alignment with the city's equity goals is a must, and we will be looking for fulfillment of that commitment. We support the proposed balance between safety and maintenance projects, recognizing that there does need to be flexibility as projects move forward. We're very excited about the safety projects, particularly in the historically underserved areas of our city. And we strongly support the proposed business fee discount of 50% for nonprofits, which allows nonprofits to contribute to the street fund without having adverse impacts on organizations serving the public good. Finally, I would also like to offer my personal support for the proposal as a Portland homeowner who would be paying, I believe, $16 a month under this proposal. My husband and I can afford this amount, and in return, we know that there would be improvements in every corner of our city. It's a good deal. We are glad to contribute to investments in our city's infrastructure to support safety and livability for all. Thank you very much for your leadership and for the opportunity to testify today in support of this progressive and necessary investment for our city.
Thanks very much for your volunteer service as well. Thank you. Okay, next three.
Are Jill Smith, Jonathan Ostar, and David Williams. They'll be followed by Noel Mickleberry, Andy Frazier, and Bob Clark.
Smith, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Jill Smith. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Home Forward, and it was my privilege to serve on the low-income nonprofit work group on behalf of the 15,000 households that our agency serves. And I have to add to that, it's not on my written testimony, that our work group really did have in mind the people that are the lowest income as we, you know, as we worked really hard to make some recommendations. And the people that we serve are the most, the luckiest of those, because they have some kind of rent assistance. There's a lot that don't. The men, women, and children our programs help live throughout Multnomah County, with the majority living in the city of Portland. Home Forward works very hard in partnership with many community agencies to house our most vulnerable citizens. We have more than 6,000 apartments ourselves. We administer short and long-term rent assistance programs for people who rent in the private market. Over the past 5 years, we've been striving to house disabled veterans experiencing homelessness. And with the city and our other partners, we've set a goal to end homelessness for veterans by the end of 2015. And I just want to strongly state that every additional fee placed upon the most vulnerable low-income members of this community is a step in the wrong direction. Home Forward appreciates all aspects of this new proposal that you've presented today and that we've worked so hard to put together as a community. It protects the people that are earning $35,000 a year or less. Middle-income families with children receive exemptions for their children and are less burdened by this proposal than the original plan. We appreciate the focus on safety improvements aligned with maintenance as a prudent and necessary choice. We also appreciate the 50% reduction for nonprofits that are providing essential services to many of the less fortunate people in our community. Just in closing, we came to you in May because we were concerned about that initial proposal. We believe this is a much more fair approach, and we believe the proposal addresses all of our original concerns. And we thank you for the opportunity we had to help shape it.
Thanks. Thanks for your advocacy. We appreciate it.
Gil, can I just add to that? And much of the reform of the Section 8 program and much of the success in getting the problems out of the VASH voucher program are the result of your tireless advocacy.
Oh, thanks.
And you've been working at this so long, you've actually changed your name in the middle of it. So
I did.
thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, members of the council, David Williams, representing Portland Public Schools. Let me begin by saying Portland Public Schools supports the proposed street fund and strongly urges the council to move forward and begin making the much-needed investment in our city's transportation infrastructure. These investments are long overdue, as you know, and much needed to ensure our students have safe and reliable ways to get to and from school. We view the City of Portland as a key partner in educating the youth of Portland, and while there are many facets to the education of a child, one of the first and foremost tasks is actually getting kids to and from school safely. We all know the quality of the roads, sidewalks, and other access points, and know that we absolutely must tackle this problem to ensure that Portland's kids can get to and from school in a safe manner, whether that be by walking, biking, riding in a bus, school, or TriMet, or riding in a private car, all of which require effective, well-maintained, and safe infrastructure. Portland Public Schools wholly supports the city's efforts to address these transportation needs through the proposed street fund. We've been active participants working on the low-income nonprofit advisory group, and we fully support a street fund that is funded by a progressive fee and doesn't place an undue burden on families that we already know are struggling. We also support a fee that is spreads the burden of paid between both businesses and homeowners in the city. A street fund would benefit all kids and all families by adequately funding a sustained investment in our city's transportation infrastructure, an investment that allows for upgrades as well as maintenance. We stand by the work of the advisory groups and encourage the council to move forward and support the proposed fund. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for your help and work on the committee. Appreciate it. Mr. Oster, welcome.
Thank you. I said my name right, too. Jonathan Oster with OPAL, Environmental Justice Oregon. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, thanks for the opportunity to speak. And it's been a privilege to work on this for the last better part of the last year. It's my job to be somewhat critical and have a healthy cynicism of public process when low-income communities and communities of color time and time again receive an inequitable share of benefits and are levied with the heaviest burdens. And I think this has been one of the most inclusive processes and transparent processes that I've witnessed really in the last 15 years. And I think that's a tribute to really your leadership in moving this proposal forward and trying to reach consensus, trying to reach something that might, while not be what everybody would most hope for, something that everybody can live with as we move forward. You know, our members, we run a Bus Riders Unite membership program for folks who are transit riders, and transit-dependent riders are the leaders of that membership group. And our folks ride the 71. They are the folks trying to get around in Lentz where it's impossible to cross the street safely, or the folks who are risking life and limb trying to get around in East Portland where things just aren't safe because they've historically been underfunded when it comes to safety investments and infrastructure. So we support this proposal really even more broadly because it really meets all of our environmental justice principles. It's progressive in the way it raises revenue. It's equitable in the way it distributes resources. It addresses long-standing community needs that will have real impacts. While we're all currently paying into the system, not everybody is currently benefiting from the system, and some folks just maybe quite don't get that. But I want us to recognize that there seems to be a bellwether moment when it comes to public sentiment. I think income inequality and its affordability concerns have really lifted up in the public consciousness, and I think they're here to stay. And the most troubling part about this is the 40% of folks that are at or around the poverty line. And that's a fight that we can have, and that's a fight that we can win. And, you said, Mr. Mayor, that, been the last 13 years that threats of referral from the business interests have killed this thing. And, I know why you and Commissioner Novick made concessions to the business community on this, because we were trying to find something that was going to work. But it feels very hollow right now. And so I want to fight with you on this. I want to fight to win this. And I want to see some of that progressivity restored into this proposal as we move forward, because I think that's a fight that we can win together. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for your advocacy. And I think it's safe to say that if we didn't spend the money the way that's laid out in these ordinances, you would be among the first that we would hear from.
I would. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, let's take the next three, please.
Oh, you need children?
Come on out.
Okay. This lady has some children to pick up.
Oh, yes, please.
And then we'll go with David Williams and Noel Mickleberry.
Welcome.
Hi, my name's Lucia Tainig. Whoa, sorry, that's a little loud.
That's fine. Go ahead.
I have two children I have to go pick up. I work full time and took vacation to be here, so I speak for a lot of people who are probably in the same position. I have a couple things to say, a few comments about the what's in front of all of you today, a comment about other sources of revenue, and then a separate comment. There's a lot of good things in this, but the devil is in the details, and the details are not there. And I think that some people made some fantastic points about involvement from the city. And what's fascinating to me is that I can get a postcard about Olson Road being shut down until March 2015, but nobody can send me a postcard about an income tax that's significant and becoming involved in that process. So I think there's some disconnects with, you know, how things are operating and gathering feedback and getting input, and I've heard some great ideas today, and I'd like to see those explored further. And I don't think they can legitimately be explored before this goes to a vote for you, you know, on December 3rd. So I think you need to kind of hit the pause button and dig into a few more details. One would be a sunset clause on it. I just, putting an income tax out there with no end to it is kind of crazy, regardless of whether it's progressive or not. And it's great that it is, and I'm supportive of many things. I'm supportive of the balance between, you know, maintenance and safety and all of that. I'm not going to nitpick on those things. But it needs more time. You need to work on it. You need to refine it. You need to gain more support for it. A lot of people here today don't support it, and I don't think the city can afford something moving forward that does not have greater public support. And that's why you really need to hit the pause button and vote no for it. Second point, other sources of income. I live three houses from where unincorporated Multnomah County starts. I really think you got to start going after that, because my taxes increased by $1,400. People with, you know, houses that are valued at twice mine increased by 200. And that's where the wealthiest people in this city live. I've got a little map right here. You can drive up 26 and get off at the Sylvan exit and start looking around. If you tax them at the rate that you taxed me and the rest of the city, that's your $50 million that you want on a basis. So put that to a vote to the people, and you'll get your $50 million a year that you want for transportation. You guys really have to start chasing that down. So coming up with something that doesn't consider other sources of revenue is not responsible. I mean, you've got to think of other sources of revenue to fund this. Finally, I think that Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick, you should both listen to the replay of your radio show that you were on yesterday. And I think you should listen to the way that you spoke to the woman from the Portland Business Alliance this afternoon, because it was beyond disrespectful. It was passive aggressive. It was unattractive social behavior. And maybe the city needs to pay for some coaching for you to go to some interpersonal training, because the way that you two spoke to each other yesterday on the radio was unattractive, and it's just not civil, and it does not have a place in public discourse.
Can I get you to clarify something? And that is the unincorporated Multnomah County folks, what is it you're recommending that we do?
That you incorporate them into the city, because they get every benefit from living in the city, and they don't pay any of the taxes,
actually,
and they won't pay this tax.
We don't have the authority to do that. They have to volunteer to come into the city.
I still think you should explore figuring out how to make that happen somehow and taxing them for the roads
that they
use.
It's actually state law.
Okay, well, if they use the roads, can you make this a Multnomah County thing instead of just the city?
No, only the county can tax the county. We can only tax people that live in the, or we can only, our taxing authority stops at the city limits. It's state law. It's how cities are set up. So you're right, there's a lot of assessed value out there, but it's not our assessed value.
Okay, well, if it's in the limits on the map, I think
just
you should go after it.
Just because they have a Portland address doesn't mean they pay taxes in Portland.
Oh, okay. Well, take their Portland address away. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks, Mayor Hales and commissioners, for giving us the opportunity to speak today. My name's Noelle Mickleberry, and I'm the executive director at Oregon Walks, the state's pedestrian advocacy organization. We're here today to support raising $46 million in new revenue, with over $20 million going towards desperately needed safety projects in the city. Our role advocating for pedestrian safety is often a somber one. Every year, especially around this time of year, we end up at vigil after vigil and hearing news story after news story of pedestrians that are injured or killed when they're trying just to cross the street, walk home from school, or headed to the nearest bus stop. This disproportionately happens in the parts of our city where we have invested the least. Places like East Portland that have the highest concentration of low-income residents and communities of color are where 7 of 10 pedestrians were killed in 2013. In addition, in Portland, you are 2.3 times more